Generation X Paranormal.
Well, hey, everybody, welcome back.
Hey, everyone.
So we're going to be talking about something pretty special today. Mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of UFO incidences out there.
Yes, there are.
Some are very, very popular. Some are much more well-known than others. There's no shortage of them. But today's a little bit different because all these events happened in 1 month. 1 month in 1968. Okay, and this is the month of November. Now, there's, not to tip the hat too much, but there's something special we're going to talk about that and why it's maybe a little bit more special than you think. So, yeah. So what we're talking about is 28 of them.
28. And there were more.
Yeah. Yeah, this is not an all-inclusive list.
We cut it down to 28.
Right. So, yeah, guys, there's a lot to unpack here. But yeah, 28 of them. And like Nicole said, we had to cut a lot and let's just say there was numerous ones, but today we're bringing you 28 of them. So yeah, without further ado, let's get into some UFO sightings.
All right. Let's start with number one.
All right.
Okay. So we're going to start with the first one.
Okay.
There are four here that we're going to cover that don't have specific dates in November.
Okay.
Because I couldn't find the dates for them. But the ones after that we'll cover, they have specific dates.
Awesome.
Okay, so we're going to start with this first one. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So, number one, this one happened in Tulancingo, Mexico. Mm-hmm. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And there was a man who was an engineer, and his name was Alberto Zacua. And him and some of his friends were out camping in an isolated area near the railroad tracks heading towards Cuernavaca. Yep. Okay. One morning he woke up and he felt pulled to a section of the nearby woods. So as he reached a clearing surrounded by tall pines, he saw an orange lighted object hovering just above the ground, suspended by a column of orange light.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. The craft was silvery white in color, disc-shaped with a small turret like a dome on top.
Wow.
Three tall, human-like figures were moving around the object. Two of the figures were inserting chrome-plated tubes into the ground as if collecting soil samples.
Well, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. The other one stood with its back to Alberto. These figures wore tight-fitting coveralls and silvery oval-shaped helmets. Apparently sensing the presence of Alberto, the one standing up suddenly turned around to look at him.
Hmm.
Okay. The being was described as human-like, very handsome, with fine chiseled features and penetrating blue-colored slanted eyes.
Hmm.
So I'm already guessing as to what these are.
Yep.
At this point, Alberto began feeling nauseated and couldn't move. Perhaps sensing his discomfort, the tall figure approached and pressed a button around a wide belt on his waist.
Oh.
A beam of green light emerged, bathing Alberto from head to toe. So it's like a
zzz. Yeah. That's kind of weird. Like a Batman utility belt or mm-hmm. something. Bink.
After this happened, Alberto felt much better. He soon began hearing telepathic communication from the being, telling him to remain calm and not to be afraid.
Okay.
The being was easily over 6'5" tall.
Man.
And as he stood next to Alberto, he removed his helmet, showing long, blonde, shoulder-length hair.
Oh, yeah.
I'm guessing Nordics.
Yep.
Okay. Still using telepathy and being told Alberto that they recognized him and that they had collaborated with him before. So this must not have been the first visit.
That's weird.
You just probably didn't know it.
Right.
Right. At one point, the tall being took Alberto by the hand. He pressed another button on his belt and a sort of wispy cloud emerged. On it, Alberto saw images of what he was told was his past lives.
Well, that's wow.
That's interesting. So, first of all, that's probably when.
This guy's hanging around with this guy's past lives on his belt. Here you go. That's weird. Anyway.
While all this was taking place, the other two beings continued collecting plant and soil samples. Before leaving, Alberto asked the beings for some sort of proof of the encounter, but they refused. He bid them goodbye and ran towards his tent to grab his camera and a pair of binoculars, at the same time waking up the other members of the campsite.
Yeah.
As he ran back to the site of the encounter, he saw the craft slowly leaving the area and apparently was able to take several photographs.
Hmm. Well, if we can find those photographs, I'll put them on the video.
Yeah.
Well,
that's a very interesting, long, detailed encounter.
First of all, I'm with you on the Nordics.
For sure. Yeah. Because usually they're not tall.
No.
Usually they're short.
Yeah.
So tall, blue eyes, blonde hair.
Yeah. And if you don't know, there's usually, well, there's a believe different types of mm-hmm. entities or visitors or aliens, whatever you want to call it. We've got what's the word I'm looking for?
You got the grays. And
right,
you got
the grays, manatee, not manatee, that's a bloop, bloop, bloop.
Manta.
Yes, the mantis. That's funny, isn't it? Anyway, Nordics are one of them.
Reptilians.
Yeah, all reptilians. That stuff. Yeah. But I find it interesting. You know what he had in his belt, right? He had like some Pepto. Just shot it at him because he's had an upset stomach or something. No, I find that really interesting. That's, you know, you hear a lot about, you know, with some of these visitors and some of these incidences that they're usually trying to calm people down or they're trying to, you know, Hollywood tells you other things, but typically, like your shirt, you know, with ET, you know, there is somewhat of a calming nature. They try to help out. And yeah, sometimes you do hear about them saying, hey, we've spoke before, you didn't know about it, I zapped your brain or whatever have you. But no, that's a super interesting one.
And pay attention to what they're all wearing, because this will come up several times through these stories. Yeah. And I'm just guessing it's 1968.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the way they describe this.
Right. Yeah. I mean, 68. I mean, mechanics wore coveralls, you know, military wore coveralls. So, yeah.
Just keep that in mind as we go forward.
Yes, indeed.
So you want to do number two?
Yeah. So 150 miles west of Yellowknife, Northwest Territories in Canada. So, again, this is November. I don't have the exact date, but we do know it's still in 1968. Mm-hmm. I find this one interesting because it's got a little bit of an interesting twist to it. Not necessarily super interesting, but let me get to it. So the flight engineer of a chartered cargo aircraft flying at 170 miles per hour from Copper Mine to Yellowknife noticed in the clear sky a stationary object emitting a pale blue light. The very first book I ever read, by the way, about UFOs was called Blue Lights. Really old. You guys should look it up. It's a kid's book, but anyway. The object approached within 1,000 feet of the airplane. Now, you may not think that's a short distance, but when you're talking about flying, that actually is. Mm-hmm. That's very important. But anyway, it flew along with it for about 5 minutes, after which it departed suddenly at great speed. It was disc-shaped, which kind of goes with the same UFO lore, and had a row of large rectangular windows, and in the middle window was a visible dark form, which the witnesses thought to be the UFO occupant, you know, the pilot or whatever have you. Now, the pilot, and this is where I find it interesting, the pilot of the aircraft and the co-pilot saw it. So it's a corroborated event.
Mm-hmm.
That's always important because, you know, you always hear about one person seeing this. Anytime you have corroborations, and the other important thing is they reported it to the air traffic control in Yellowknife. So it is now a certified UFO sighting. Mm-hmm. I find that interesting because it came very close.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're flying at, you know, 170 miles per hour, you don't think of it as that much, but deviation of any of that, I mean, those two aircraft are going to meet, and that's not a good thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Third one?
Let's bring it on.
Okay. Third one happens in Anderson Air Force Base in Guam in the evening.
Okay.
Okay. So we're jumping all over the world here. This is not centrally located in one country or anything. We're going to jump back and forth.
Yep.
So at the back gate where they, I guess, dump the bombs.
Yeah.
Something they do.
I'm not sure what they're referring to. Well, being an aviation ordnance man in the past, I'm not 100% sure what they're talking about. Bombs come in assembly. So I wonder if there's like a certain part where they have certain munitions that they no longer use, but a lot could of that be. Stuff destroys. We destroy, at least in the U.S. military.
But the, you know, other countries do things differently.
Well, it's Guam. So I actually think that's a U.S. military. So most of Guam's U.S. Military is U.S. military. So I find it, I find it interesting. I don't know. Maybe it's just some expanded ammunitions, but anyway. Yeah.
So this is the first time hearing this encounter, like not just the encounter, but the description of the encounter for me.
Okay.
We'll see what you think. So a man named Mike Martindale reported that he saw two black human-like figures and they attacked his gatehouse. So I'm guessing a gatehouse is what, where they,
yeah. So you know, when you stand guard, there's obviously the standing gate. Guard. There's the house that they're usually in the guard. They call that a gatehouse.
So people that, you know, watch.
Yeah.
All night on patrol, basically. Okay.
Usually you find it at like the perimeter of an installation. Mm-hmm. And it's not just military. If you see anywhere you go, you know, like Joe Dirt, the guy says, you know, don't church it up, Joe Dirt-ay. Technically, the booth he was in was considered a gatehouse.
Okay. Random.
Yeah.
Okay. So one on top of a bunker fired a ray like a device at the gatehouse.
Oh.
So like a ray gun.
Which would be considered an act of aggression.
Mm-hmm. So Martindale took cover and he fired his M1 carbine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming some type of gun.
Yes, it is.
Okay. And he dropped the figure from the bunker into the bushes below. So he so it's like they were attacking and coming up and he shot it and it fell. So a second figure ran from behind the gatehouse and was also fired upon, but he vanished into the jungle. A week later, Martindale was flown back to the U.S. under guard. He claims he saw these same figures on several occasions between June and November. Whoa. So this is several months.
So
two black human-like figures.
There's so much to unpack there. Number one, given this is probably a U.S. installation, anytime you engage, there's a lot of paperwork. There's a lot, I mean...
But could it have been just people in black clothes attacking?
Sure.
Because this is the first time I've ever heard anything being black.
No. Think about the UFO landing in Zimbabwe. They were wearing black.
They had black hair.
Oh, you're right.
But not completely black. That's what makes me think, like, maybe this is a misidentified. But I don't know. I mean, you'd think they wouldn't keep coming back over and over.
The ray device,
but the ray, yeah, that's the only thing that throws me off because it's 1968.
Yeah, it's not like we're running around there with a bunch of ray guns, you know?
Yeah, nobody has, like, fake Star Wars. What are they?
Yeah, lightsabers.
Lightsabers, yeah. The fake lightsabers.
Soon, but not that soon.
Yeah.
I don't know, guys. You're going to have to answer that one in the comments. Yeah. Tell us what you think.
I don't know. Number
Moving
four.
Moving on.
I'm going to try to keep track of these numbers if I can. I think we're on
Please
number four.
Please do. Mm-hmm. So moving on. Pine Bush, New York in the evening. Again, don't have an exact date. We know it's November 1968. Mm-hmm. Yada, yada, yada. Six persons on the isolated Oregon Trail. I always just find that funny.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever been in school at the age that we were, you know the Oregon Trail well. Actually, they probably still do it, don't they?
I have no idea.
Anyway, so let's start again. Six persons on the isolated Oregon Trail watched a round UFO with three spotlights fanning the ground and hovering at treetop level. It's interesting. It hovered over a bridge as a witness noticed it had windows around the rim and they could see figures inside. So here we are again. Mm-hmm. You're seeing occupants inside. That doesn't happen a lot, guys. It was as big as a house, and it glided silently over the witnesses, stopped, and then zoomed straight up in the air and out of sight. Now, first of all, if you know anything about avionics, zooming up straight up in a sight, I mean, that doesn't happen. We don't have anything that can do that.
No, especially not in 1968.
No. And, you know, the fact that it's fanning, you know, around the ground, it's hovering at treetop level. If it was a helicopter, you would hear it.
Well, yeah.
You know, and that's, especially in 1968, the only thing we would have had at that point mm-hmm. would have been these big Huey aircraft.
Well, yeah, and this choppers. Is round, something round.
Right, right. So now this is another one of those interesting ones where we go, okay, we don't have a date, but we know this is somewhat recorded. But but yeah, it's definitely interesting.
And pay attention to the size.
Yes. Because
this will come up again.
Keep note.
All right, on to the next.
On to the next. And now we're getting into the dated ones.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, for the next three, they're pretty special. Not only do they all happen on the same day, but they happen in the same place.
Yes.
So this would be in November 1st of 1968, of course, in Batas Rizal province in the Philippines. I'm guessing that's how you pronounce it, I hope. Anyway, the first one starts at 4 a.m. So at 4 a.m., a Filipino farmer saw an object with a red light land 100 yards away, making a hiss like an arc welder. I don't know if you know what that sounds like, mm-hmm. but he went out with a flashlight and encountered a white object the size of a Volkswagen. I would imagine a Volkswagen Beetle, right? The bug.
No, Herbie. Probably like the big old Volkswagen.
With small wheels and six exhaust tubes in the rear. Okay. Through a transparency canopy, he saw two occupants wearing white coveralls
mm-hmm.
with earphones on their heads. They look like, this is the part I laugh at. They look like ordinary Caucasians. It's a Filipino man. It just sounded funny when he said it.
Because we all look the same.
As he approached the object, it moved with a roar and then took off vertically without making much of a noise. It was not reported if there were traces found at site, but I found that interesting that Caucasians, now we laugh about that, but we talked about this mm-hmm. earlier. So yeah. Anyway, the next one is at 6 a.m. Now, the second encounter occurred 2 hours, of course, later than when another farmer was walking towards Baras and felt an object land behind him. Apparently the same craft with wheels and an occupied with the same two individuals. Once again, we're seeing occupants.
Mm-hmm.
This guy was so freaked out, he ran to the mayor to report the encounter. So that was pretty intense for those farmers at that point in time. But now the next one is at 11 a.m. This one's a little more interesting, but again, same place, same date. The third encounter was made by another farmer. Those farmers were busy that morning, bicycling towards the site that was reported on the first incident.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, hey, let's go check out what happened to this farmer, right? He saw the same strange car downhill from his position. As he coasted down towards the object on his bike, he saw two men, one outside of the object looking around, was very tall and looked like a normal Caucasian. The other was inside the object, and both were wearing white coveralls mm-hmm. and what appeared to be earphones. Now the earphones, I don't understand what that is. I mean, maybe that's some kind of telepathy device. I don't know. He stopped about 20 yards past the object, looked back and saw the man outside watching him. That's not freaking up. He was undecided whether he should go back and speak to him. The man got in the vehicle and then with a roar, it moved uphill and then ascended silently into the sky.
That's interesting.
Very, very interesting. Again, mm-hmm. every one of these happened at the same place within hours of each other yes. on the same date to multiple farmers. We probably all knew each other, by the way. That's mm-hmm. my guess. But it's just funny. First of all, it's funny they use Caucasians, but that's tongue in cheek for a reason.
Right.
And they, you know, at that
blonde hair,
yeah, blue blonde eyes, hair, blue eyes,
very white skin,
right, wearing white coveralls. It's funny they kept calling it a car like a Volkswagen.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's like what in the '60s those Volkswagen.
Yeah, they were very popular.
They were like big boats, weren't they?
Well, that depends. I mean, there were some. Anyway, I don't get too hung up on it, but yeah, there are several different VWs in those days. There was mm-hmm. there was of course the thing called the Thing. I don't know if that was in '68 or not. But I'm guessing it's like a Beetle, like a Volkswagen Bug.
That's awful small.
Yeah.
Because they're talking about it being bigger, so I don't think it's
maybe they are talking about the big bus van
type. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, like a big boat-looking thing. Possibly.
Yeah, possibly.
I don't know, but I think it's interesting that they're all in outlying areas.
Mm-hmm.
So if they were out getting soil samples and stuff, that's where they would be in farmland.
Right. I mean, it makes perfect sense if you're trying to study something.
Yes.
But sure, spook these poor farmers.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, so now we're on sighting number 8.
Yeah.
This one also happened on November 1st of 1968, but now we're going to southern France.
It's a big jump.
Mm-hmm. Quite a ways from the Philippines, I would say.
Just slightly.
Yeah. So there was a French doctor, and he was awakened by the sound of his 14-month-old son crying. Okay.
Yeah.
Normal. His son was standing in his crib, pointing at the window. And behind the shutter, there was a bright light that was moving. After the child had gone back to sleep, the doctor went out on his balcony, and he saw two glowing discs in the sky, silvery white on top and bright red underneath. So that's that silvery white we hear again. Okay. Each had a tall antenna on top and on either side, and they were directing a narrow beam of white light towards the ground below.
Hmm.
So we heard that again.
Yep.
The two objects slowly drew closer and merged into one single object about 200 feet in diameter and 50 feet thick. That's pretty big.
That's big.
It approached the doctor and then tilted 90 degrees so that the beam of light struck him, which that's kind of freaky.
Jeez.
He then heard a loud bang and the object evaporated into a whitish cloud that dissipated with the wind. A thin thread of light rose high into the sky before vanishing as a white dot and exploding like a firework.
Hmm. Okay.
So kind of like,
yeah.
Right? Now, a few days earlier, the doctor had accidentally cut a vein in his leg while he was chopping wood. And a decade earlier, he had stepped on a landmine in Algeria, leaving his right side partially paralyzed. But after this happened, and he got struck by the light, he found that the swelling and the pain from his leg injury had vanished, and the chronic after effects of the injuries he had sustained in the Algerian War improved dramatically in the days that followed. So it, like, it healed him.
That's like that beam again that first guy had. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Except he got a little extra.
A little extra in there.
A few days after this encounter, the doctor and his child each developed a strange reddish triangular mark on their abdomens. And this mark kept coming back in successive years. So it would just appear.
Huh.
Unless they're just not remembering their getting visited again. I don't know. But yeah, the mark kept coming back.
Well, that's deep.
So after this happened, strange paranormal phenomena began to take place around the doctor and his family, including poltergeist activity and unexplained disturbances in electrical circuits. The doctor began to have mysterious meetings with a strange nameless man he called Mr. Bide or Bead.
Hmm.
He would hear a whistling noise inside his head and would feel guided to walk or drive to a certain location where he would meet the man who would discuss his UFO experience and paranormal matters. So like a therapist.
Whoa.
That's what it sounds like to me. Mr. Bide caused him to experience apparent teleportation and time travel, including an episode where he saw different landscapes on a road that didn't exist.
Okay. That's weird.
It's a weird description.
Yeah.
But like something that would be otherworldly is what I'm guessing.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. The stranger also once visited the doctor at his home, accompanied by a 3-foot-tall humanoid with mummified skin, which remained motionless while his eyes quickly darted around the room.
A gray.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's, so they're teaming up.
Yeah, but, you know, it's been said before that, like, sometimes they think the grays are, like, the worker bees, per se, or the soldiers.
Right.
They send them out. So that's what's interesting about this, is, like, the main person comes, but then brings the...
Okay, worker. I mean, that's pretty spooky.
The doctor also said he experienced uncontrolled levitation on at least one occasion.
Uncontrolled levitation?
Like, start
I'm just going to fall up. Holy crap.
This is like a big, big encounter. Like, this is a huge amount of information, this little story.
That's just wild.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, going deep into my fear categories, that's one of my biggest fears is falling up. It's weird. But I couldn't imagine uncontrolled levitation.
Yeah.
That's just wild.
But I'm thinking about this man. Okay. He was in the war. Okay. But he's also a doctor. So he's scientific minded, right? For him to come out and say all this stuff.
Well, no, without a doubt, that's definitely a huge one. And then he's having these conversations with this guy.
Which he doesn't really describe what he looks like, but I would imagine it's kind of the same, maybe like another Nordic type.
Yeah. And he's
because he does talk about the light and the healing and there's no utility belt this time. They just used the ship.
I guess Batman had it that day.
But that's interesting.
That is interesting. I don't
like meetups afterwards.
I don't know quite where to wrap my head around that one. That's definitely more in line of kind of like we talked to Preston a little bit about, where some of these, you know, reoccurring, visits and stuff.
Find someone that,
I don't
know, like take them under their wing or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Check out that Preston Denovan interview, by the way.
Yeah. It was interesting.
Yeah.
On to the next.
All right. Moving on to number 9. So if you guys aren't paying attention, this is still November 1969. This is November 2nd, 1968. Sorry. I said 9. I'm sorry. And this is in Estación Hume, Santa Fe, Argentina. I try to spice it up a little bit. This is 4 a.m. The faculty and pupils of Estación Hume School, located 5 kilometers from Rosario, observe the maneuvers of a UFO in the form of an inverted basin. Now, if you've ever seen a basin, I would just imagine
it's flipped. So yeah, it's like flipped. A dome is what
right,
I'm
like
guessing.
A dome.
Yeah.
Surrounded by a strong red light. Interesting. Here we are, a red light again, which began a slow descent, giving the impression that it was preparing to land. Its upper part was transparent, and inside there were profiles of 4 human silhouettes. Here we are again. With medium stature. Suddenly the object made a sharp turn and went away at great speed without any sound, leaving behind a white light trail. So here we are again.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing occupants inside. Now they didn't say they were Caucasian in nature.
No.
But they are saying that they're humanoid.
Right. They can tell that.
Yeah, they can tell it's human-like or humanoid. So it is a very interesting encounter.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're going to go on to number 10, which is same day, November 2nd, except this time we're going to Denmark.
Yay, okay.
Okay. Now, this was a woman, and she was at her summer residence in Ulfshale.
That sounds good, yeah.
Okay. And this place faces the Eastern Sea. So she decided to go outside for a walk, and through a hole in the hedge, she noticed a bright object floating over a nearby hill. The object resembled a very tall and wide man wearing a long cowl.
Cowl, like as in Batman cowl?
Yeah, I guess.
That's like cool. Tell him he's got the utility belt.
The figure appeared to be growing in size, like it was like getting taller and wider. Now, as the witness walked into the field to get a closer look, she noticed 3 more similar glowing figures. One was glowing dark red in color.
Whoa.
So I'm guessing that maybe the light is coming down from the ship above them.
Yeah.
Not necessarily, they're just glowing, but I don't know. Now, all 3 figures floated above the ground and all then disappeared into some bushes and trees. The red glowing figure appeared one more time very briefly and was seen floating up a hill and out of sight.
Okay.
So I'm guessing maybe up into the ship.
Sure, like the beam of light sucking it up, for lack of better words.
I mean, that's been said to happen.
Sure, sure.
But she didn't see a ship. It may have been above the clouds or something.
That's wild.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Number 11, November 9th of 1968 in Lakeland, Florida. A homemaker sees a large disc-shaped object hovering over the house. And here we go. Several men-like creatures could be seen through some lighted portholes. So again, this is a really quick one, but you kind of get in the theme here a little bit.
Yeah, they're all saying the same thing.
Right.
And what, you know, the one said it was transparent on the top, but these others are talking about like actual windows. So I found that a little bit interesting.
Well, yeah, and it could just be from line of sight. Sometimes if you see something at a distance and it has holes, but it's see-through, sometimes it looks like it's see-through, or I'm sorry, it has portholes like windows. Mm-hmm. At a certain distance, sometimes your eyes can play a little trick on you.
That's true.
And it doesn't look complete. It just looks like it's something transparent.
That could be. Yeah. That makes more sense. Okay. Number 12. This one is odd.
Yes.
It's very odd. So this one happens on November 9th in El Salto, Santiago, Chile.
Yay, Chile.
Okay. There were two young sisters, Aphrodite and Eugenia Lavezano Ilfar. I hope I'm not butchering
that. Yeah.
Okay. And I think Aphrodite was 12 and then Eugenia was 9.
Okay.
At the time. And they were playing on a Sunday night in front of their home when they suddenly saw a large ball of fire approaching from the nearby mountains, which quickly came to a stop in front of the girls. The first to see the red ball of fire was Aphrodite, who was on her bicycle and noticed a red light suddenly appear from behind the mountain. It resembled a star.
Okay.
Okay. The red light seemed gelatinous in nature. So I'm guessing like moving.
Yeah. Translucent.
Yeah. Like wiggly. I mean, these are kids describing it, so.
Yeah. I mean, that would make sense.
They're coming up with like a jello type.
Yeah.
You know? So it was red and then it changed to a greenish tint. Ooh. Both girls could now clearly see what appeared to be a small woman inside the sphere.
Okay.
A woman inside the sphere.
Now we're not looking at, and a lot of the times these things are classically seen as male.
Right.
So this is interesting.
Mm-hmm. So the strange entity had a large mouth. Which is different.
That's usually different, yeah.
Which seemed to be moving repeatedly, apparently calling the girls. It also had a pair of large pointed ears. It sounds to me like a fairy or an elf. Like, that's the image that I get of this.
Yeah.
Because typically, especially in drawings and stuff, when you see a fairy that got the large pointed ears, and they always draw the mouth really big.
Yeah, I see that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
I also think of Vulcans. But of course, I'm a nerd.
Yes.
It is what it is.
Okay. Now, moments later, the small woman exited the sphere and approached Aphrodite, who then attempted to run but was unable to move due to a strong pulling force.
Like a tractor beam.
Mm-hmm. Which apparently pulled her by her blouse and suspended her in midair.
Oh.
So now she's being held up in the air.
Jeez.
Yeah. Now, when Eugenia reached the kitchen door, the force seemed to release Aphrodite, who suffered then from earaches, hoarseness, and what appeared to have been scratches on her waist area.
Okay.
Yeah. Sounds more like a demon thing.
Yeah, so much for helping him out.
No. It was later determined that a third girl, 12-year-old Monica Patricia Lagos, also saw this lady. Okay.
Okay.
Which she described it as a ball of fire, which floated around over the ground and then disappeared in a flash.
God, that's almost...
So that's three girls that saw this.
It's that this story has so much more than just like UFO visitor stuff wrapped
up. Yeah, this one's different. And we did come across a few that were not typical UFO, and we decided not to put them in just because they were way out there. And it would have made it really long.
Right.
But there were more than just typical UFO things in these stories in November.
Yeah. Pointy-eared person running around like a fireball. That's...
Yeah. It's odd. It's the first time I've heard of it.
Yeah. Hey, tell us in the comments what you think of that one.
Yeah. Okay. On to the next.
On the next. Number 13. November 12th, Parador de Arcon, Spain. Businessman Francisco Doniz was driving on his way to Malaga when he received a telepathic message instructing him to go to a certain location. It's already interesting. On his way there, his vehicle stopped working for some reason, but was helped by a friendly trucker and managed to restart his vehicle. Now, once he was at the site, he was surprised to see a disc-shaped object hovering 3 meters above the road, next to the road. I should say next to the road, I'm sorry. As he watched an opening become visible in the craft, a retractable ladder descended to the ground, kind of like what you would see in, you know, well, I guess 60s UFO stuff.
Mm-hmm.
On which a human-like figure descended and approached Doniz with his arms stretched out, like in an obvious sign of peace. Now, speaking perfect Spanish, which is, I found this interesting, The stranger informed Donis that his name was Francisco Atienza and that he was a descendant of extraterrestrials. Mm-hmm. Go figure that one.
That's interesting, yeah.
The stranger was totally human in appearance and wore a one-piece gray driver suit or coveralls. A long conversation ensued between Atienza and Donis, in which took place inside the witness's car. Now, he told Donis that he came from a planet called Urin, is the way I think it would be pronounced, whose original inhabitants were a short, large-headed humanoids. I find that interesting. However, there existed on Urin a human colony. So there was humans living there, which lived under a huge glass dome. Since the atmosphere of Urin was toxic to humans, he further explained that life under these conditions had existed massive sterilization amongst that human colony, which had more females than males.
There's so much to unpack.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty wild.
Yeah. So there's a human colony living on this planet.
Right.
But they live under a dome.
Which would make sense because we need oxygen.
Mm-hmm. But this person that's telling this is a humanoid figure descended from extraterrestrials. So he's actually,
I
don't know.
What I think happened is there was some intermingling of those two people on the planet.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's wild. And the fact that
it's a wild story.
Well, not just that, but the fact that it spoke perfect Spanish and had a Spanish surname and name.
Mm-hmm. Well, he could have just.
Well, sure. It's still pretty amazing.
Got some wild stories here.
Hmm. On to the next.
Okay, number 14. And this is actually the first story that I saw and then discovered that there were all these sightings in November of 1968.
Right.
But this is the one that kind of like piqued my interest.
Okay.
Okay, so this happens on November 14th in Zafra, Spain.
Okay.
Okay. Now, on the night of November 14th, Manuel Trejo, who was a welder, was caught in the middle of the road by a weird experience. Okay. He was driving his old Citroen.
That's
some type of car, I guess. On the road in Spain on his way to Zafra. It was about 10:50 p.m. at night, and the road was deserted. And the banks of fog with a fine rain were, you know, kind of made it kind of like a spooky road.
Sure.
But he was traveling with a load of coal tied to the roof of his car.
Good Lord.
I don't know how you do that.
Yeah. Hang on while I strap some coal to the top of my car.
So he started to notice that his vehicle was misfiring and like was messing up and, it was kind of, moving back and forth, like kind of wavering.
Yeah. That'll happen in a car when it starts misfiring. It kind of gives that. Yeah.
So of course the car slowed down and the headlights started to dim.
Okay, like it was losing power.
Sure. Yeah. So he continued driving. I mean, he was just going slower, but he came around a curve and to his right, about 1,000 feet, he saw a human silhouette that at first he thought to be from their civil guard. I guess they're
like military.
Military there. And he went ahead and continued to approach, but as he got closer, and he illuminated it with the headlights of the car. He said, I passed by him, but it was a humanoid of approximately 3.5 foot tall.
Oh, okay.
Wearing a kind of a tight fitting overalls.
There we go.
He had very large hands in which he appeared to be wearing dark gloves and the fingers could be distinguished perfectly. And he also appeared to be wearing black boots.
Wow, okay.
So now we don't have a tall Nordic. Now we've got, I'm guessing, like gray.
Yeah, like a gray.
But humanoid. So it's not saying it looks weird.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, no, a gray can kind of be classified as humanoid.
Yeah. But he's talking about the coveralls and the boots.
Here we go with coveralls again.
Now, he said he couldn't see the features of the face because it was in the shadows. But what he could make out was long, straight black hair.
Black hair.
I know.
Okay.
Black hair.
Getting excited.
But not black everywhere.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Now, he drove past this very slowly, and he said the humanoid was motionless and was just watching him. So as he was passing, the overalls that this thing was wearing began to have like reflections.
Oh, okay.
Okay, like light reflections. And he saw lots of little like red, green, and blue lights. And he said they were about the size of peas. Like the peas that you eat.
So like a refractive surface with like those pea-like texture. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
He said it kind of looked like a Christmas tree.
I could see that.
And as it like kept lighting up, the lighting multiplied. Like it got brighter is basically what the way he was trying to describe it. So like a Christmas tree, the little tiny lights.
Okay.
But they twinkled and then they kept getting brighter and brighter and brighter.
Okay.
Okay. Now, immediately after this happened, and he, like, I guess he was driving past him slowly.
Sure.
The being started to approach his vehicle.
Yeah.
So, what do you think he did? Sped the car.
He's getting the F out of there.
But, after he got somewhat down the road, he went ahead and stopped and he looked in the rearview mirror and he saw nothing. Everything had disappeared.
That's weird.
Mm-hmm. Now, it doesn't stop. So 2 days later, he's returning home along the same road, okay? And he sees a powerful light in the sky. And at first he thought, okay, it's a Civil Guard helicopter. He's thinking military again, okay? But the light began to drop and came closer to his car, but keeping the same distance as he was driving.
Oh, they're following him now.
So following, yeah. Now, he said the shape of the object, it kind of looked like a lemon cut in half.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Same thing like one of those basins or something like that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it measured, he thought, about 20 feet in diameter.
God, that's big.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He said it emitted an intense white light, and from it came a kind of tripod. So I'm guessing like three legs.
Yeah, that classic UFO.
Yeah, and a lot of exhaust tubes spread around the circumference that spewed fire like the flames of a blowtorch.
There's the gas tubes again. That's weird.
Well, yeah, we've heard that, and we've heard like kind of the
flame. Flame. Mm-hmm.
Now he said the light followed him for a few minutes. And he, quote, said, excited, nervous, and scared, the only thing he could think of was to signal him with the car lights. So he starts to begin flashing the lights at this thing, okay?
I could see that.
And then after that happened, he heard a loud hiss. And whatever this thing was began to move, disappearing into the background sky at full speed. And it quickly became as small as a star.
That's not the first time we've heard any of that.
I know.
The hiss.
Talked about the hiss.
And the star, too.
And the star.
Mm-hmm. Well, folks, that is what we call coincidental.
That's why when I read this, I thought, oh, my gosh, this is a crazy encounter. And then when I came across all these other sightings in November and then was reading the same things over and over and over, I'm like, we got to talk about everything. Yeah. Because I didn't realize there were so many sightings
it's in November. It's a huge event. Yeah.
1968. Yeah. One of the biggest.
Yeah.
So on to the next.
On to the next. And now number 15. So November 19th. I'm going to try not to butcher this, okay? Pirassununga, Sao Paulo, Brazil. 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 Anyway, four college students identified only as Jamie, Luis, Walter, and Osmar were driving to Pirassununga when they encountered a light in the sky. And it approached about 30, 40 yards from the car, which caused its engine to fail. That's interesting here in a minute. After 5 or 10 minutes, the light went ahead of them, appearing as a bluish, luminous disc about a yard in diameter. Here we are, blue again, disc. The car would now run, but would not gain any speed. That's pretty weird. Mm-hmm. It's a combustion engine, so it's not going anywhere. After they had passed the luminous object, it began to behave normally. They almost ran down a man in the road. So they're really freaked out at this point, with his right arm extended, asking for a lift. This is all real interesting. Three more men were standing beside the road like the first. They were all tall, dressed in a light blue diving suit. Mm-hmm. There we go. But they drove past them. They want nothing to do with it. So,
yep.
Yeah, that's That's pretty freaky. So car started malfunctioning, which, by the way, immediately made me start thinking of Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Oh, yeah. Well, every time you hear that, it kind of...
Yeah, I think about old poor Roy and his truck. And if you haven't seen it, spoiler alert, but it was made in the 70s, guys. But this UFO goes over him and the car dies. And, you know, you get all these weird lights flashing. And then all of a sudden, as it passed it, the car started, again, to scare the crap out of poor, you know, Richard Dreyfuss. But... I find it interesting that these guys are asking for a ride.
Well, or at least getting them to stop.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
It's very interesting.
Okay, number 16, November 20th, Tingo Maria, Peru. So there was a report in a jungle area. There was a large disc-shaped object that descended and came to a rest on the ground near three boys that were playing in a nearby field. Curious as kids are, they approached this object and noticed two short figures standing next to it. One of the boys attempted to get closer to the object, but he suddenly went unconscious.
Jeez.
Now, the two short beings kind of like signaled somehow the other two boys to like come and get their friend.
Yeah.
Which they did. And the child was supposedly taken to a local hospital where. This is a sad part. He died.
Oh, man.
Suffering from third-degree burns.
Oh, man.
On the site where this was supposedly happened, there was an area of scorched brush that was found.
That's really sad.
It is really sad. Now, you know, wasn't there a case where somebody got burned?
Well, there's a lot of cases of that because it, you know, depending on the...
Because it's radiation. Right, radiation. Whatever... It may be that's coming off of the craft and he got too close to it, possibly.
Yeah, that's sad. But, you know, what's interesting is that they did tell like, their friend, hey, come out here and help this guy.
Yeah, sad.
It is sad. But they did have burns on the ground, so that's...
It shows it was there.
Yeah, that's... I forgot what kind that is. Not the third. Is that the fourth kind? Or no, that's the third. I don't know. You guys can let me know. But that's a whole lot of evidence.
Yeah. So this next encounter, number 17, is a pretty big encounter.
Okay.
Like it was well known. So this happened on November 20th in Hanbury, England. Okay, so there was this family, the Milakovics, okay, and they had a lot of children, and they were planning on moving. So on the afternoon of November 20th, 1968, they left where they were to go to the English countryside to go view this Hanbury Hall. Okay. And I guess Hanbury is in an area where there's, I guess, 3.5 miles to the northwest is an army installation.
Okay.
Okay. And then 2 miles to the northwest is a Royal Air Force station.
Okay.
Which was used as an ammunition dump. And there were rumors that nuclear weapons were stored there. Okay. This is why this is important. Now, 3 miles to the south is a World War II airfield used by some coop brewery, I guess, for light aircraft.
Okay.
Okay, so all the way around this area are different military installations.
Right.
So I think that's some, kind of like, important to this story.
And like maybe like an air force of some sort. No, yeah.
So on the road home, they stopped just outside Hanbury to look at an old house for sale.
Okay.
Now, as they drove on, it was starting to get dark. It was between 5:30 and 5:45 p.m. We are in England, so it's getting dark early. Okay.
Right.
Now, the couple saw a rabbit go across the road, followed by a number of other rabbits. So, like, a bunch of rabbits running across the road. Okay. So, as they glanced to the left, they saw a object in the field. Now, the husband stopped the car as this UFO rose slowly and flew over the car. Now, the couple got out and watched as the object moved over a field on the right side of the road toward a house about 100 yards away. And as it got over the house, it stopped, hovered, and quivered, quote, like a jelly.
Gelatinous again.
Now, Doris Milakovic, the wife, said that the air temperature appeared warmer as the UFO flew overhead, but as it moved on, the temperature dropped.
Radiation.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
She also said that the object looked as wide as the house. That's the, what, third or fourth time they say it's as big as a house. Now, for about 5 minutes, Mrs. Milakovic, her husband, and son saw what appeared to be several humanoid figures walking across the top of the UFO. That's the first time we've heard that. They said some of the figures were seen to bend down as though looking at something in the part of the object below the rim. So I would guess like standing on top, bending like right underneath.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So then they said the object began moving up in a pulsating or jerky movement, like wobbly, is what I'm guessing. Its light intensity greatly increased, and the husband felt like his eyes were burning looking at it. Now, of course, you know, they're scared to death.
Why wouldn't you be?
The husband pushed his wife and son into the car, and they sped away.
I could see that.
Yeah. But this is a big incident
that happened,
and happening in England.
So there were several different big cases that happened in England, especially around some of these installations. So this is interesting, and
because of where it's located,
right? Mm-hmm. And you know, when you have not just the visual of the craft, now you're having physical manifestations,
temperature,
right? You feel the temperature, and then your eyes are burning. You know, that's that I think that pales in other sightings pale in comparison. Court, look, we can go out in the night sky and see stuff all day long, you know, and go, okay, that might be a UFO. Fine, great, maybe, maybe not. It could just be, you know, startling. But you start running into these things where not only are you having such a close encounter, no pun intended. You know, now you're getting this radiation. I mean, these are severe physical manifestations. So,
well, and you got to think, they say, okay, like 5 minutes, but probably in that time watching, you know, 5 minutes can pass really fast or slow depending on what's happening at the time.
Yeah.
And if you're seeing this, it's probably like creeping by, watching these things walk around on top of a UFO, watching them like work on it. And
if you're panicked, 5 minutes is an eternity.
Yes, it is. It is. So I thought that one was really interesting.
Really interesting.
Number 18.
There we go.
November 21st. Macedo.
Yeah.
How do you say that? Sao Paulo.
Brazil? Sao Paulo.
Yeah. Sao Paulo, Brazil. Okay. Now, there was a witness who was on a bus that had stopped her for a while in the town. Okay. And as she was looking out, about 40 yards away, there was a domed metallic UFO the size of a small car hovering only a few feet above the ground. So maybe you were right about the bug. Now, around the rim, a row of changing lights gave the impression of spinning. And beneath it, a patch of violet light was cast to the ground.
Okay, blue, violet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, a door in the object was open with three steps below it, and standing in front of the UFO were 3 6-foot-tall figures of human appearance wearing skin-tight, shiny black coveralls and shiny black boots.
Coveralls again, and these tall people again.
The suits were one piece, covering the heads, so that only the face was left exposed. So that could be what happened in Guam.
Yeah, maybe.
Think about it, because if it was nighttime, he wouldn't have seen that.
That's true.
So that's interesting. One of the men was carrying a cylindrical implement, 2 foot long and 3 inches thick, with a thinner tube of aluminum-like material coiled in a spiral around it.
There it is again.
So what would that be?
I don't know.
It's like a wand.
Kind of.
Thing.
Yeah.
Now, facing the beings was a crowd of about 20 people. So this is a massive sighting.
Right.
Okay. Including 3 police officers who had their guns drawn.
Jeez.
2 police cars were parked nearby. After a short time, a beam of silver light shot forth from the cylinder, and the people closest to the beings were paralyzed.
Oh, crap.
Yeah.
Others, here's for shooting your guns at me.
Right. Others felt like they were going to faint.
Okay.
So probably the ones that were behind them just got a little bit
The touch of the, yeah.
Now, the men, loosely, walked calmly back to this object, which they boarded, and the craft then took off and rapidly climbed out of sight.
Hmm.
The incident lasted about 15 minutes.
Again, when you're scared out of your mind, 15 minutes is a freaking eternity. 15 minutes
is a long time. So were they paralyzed for 15 minutes?
God, you wouldn't think so, but if you were, can you imagine how scary that is?
That's a long time.
And then, rightly so, these cops got these guns drawn. Mm-hmm. So already the well, loose men.
Yeah. You're shooting me.
Yeah. Here, you got something for you.
It doesn't sound like anything. They were trying to do anything, though.
No.
It just sounds like, okay, I'm going to stop you right there before you guys get crazy. No violence.
Just
you know, wild. So we can leave. And then you'll be okay.
It's a way to calm your jets, pal. Hang on a second.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me. But that would be a scary.
That'd be very scary.
Mm-hmm.
All right, number 19. November 22nd, Biloxi, Mississippi. I've been to Biloxi, Mississippi. That's a pretty cool place. Anyway, a dome disc descended, flew over a shrimp boat, hovered briefly, shone a light down on the boat, then took off straight out of the sky. It's a smaller event, mm-hmm. but again,
not that small to the person. That's seen
yeah, I'm sure the people seeing it were like, "Yeah, it wasn't a small event for us, pal."
Yeah,
but still, same month, same year. Mm-hmm. Now, number 22nd in Albany, Georgia, which isn't too terribly far from Biloxi, Mississippi.
That's correct.
An oval object beamed down on a car. Here we go again, and the electrical system failed naturally. After it departed, it rapidly started right up again, and everything started functioning fine. Once again, old close encounters of the third kind, right? Mm-hmm. But again, right next to the one we just mentioned in Biloxi, Mississippi.
These are all the same day.
All the same day. Now, number 21, November 22nd, I'm guessing this is Fleur Adair, France. I'm terrible, guys. I'm sorry. Anyway, I'll put it on screen so you guys can try to read it yourself. But this is at 9 p.m. A dozen witnesses saw a lens-shaped object, which I'm guessing like a contact lens, well, got like a dome.
Talking about like lemon and
right.
all other stuff. Yeah.
Basin. An object surrounded with a blue glow, making a noise similar to that of a jet, which I find interesting because most of them don't make any noise. Emitted flashes, which landed in a field briefly, then it suddenly took off and was lost from sight from the horizon. Yeah, most of the time you don't hear noises, but I guess, you know, I mean, why couldn't they have different vehicles? You know, you never know.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know anything.
No, that's true. I don't know anything. All right, number 22. November 23rd, Newton, Georgia at 8:05 p.m. Okay, so witness Mr. Jones. Sorry, Mr. Jones. Oh, I can't myself. I got stuck in my head. Anyway, an accountant saw a beam 5 to 6 foot wide come down from a point about 200 feet overhead and 75 foot off the ground, illuminating trees. And what's interesting is that the car radio faded into static. So it interrupted radio transmission.
Yeah.
So the beam retracted slowly in a like a ladder into a fuzzy main light. Okay. So I guess I'm seeing that as when it retract, it just kind of yeah, like
distorted it.
Yeah, distorted it. That's a good way to put it. An oval shaped yellowish light, white light about 100 feet wide, which changed into a brighter reddish orange, rose vertically, disappearing less than 15 seconds.
That's so fast.
It was very fast.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, car restarted.
Of course. Of course it did.
Yeah, I find it interesting that you see a lot of this where not only does it interfere with radio transmission, it interferes with cars.
Well, it's pausing everything.
Yeah.
That's what's interesting.
That is interesting.
Number 23 happened on November 25th, Curicó, Chile.
Chile.
Okay. So this happened at sunset. And a man named Alejandro Gonzalez Reyes left his house to go find his wife. I don't know where she was, but he didn't know. Okay.
I'd find you. I'd try to look for you somewhere.
Then 200 230 feet away, he saw like a metallic object descend from the sky to an altitude of about 150 feet.
Okay.
Okay. Now, he says it was about 6 foot in diameter and about 5 foot high, so 5 foot tall.
I'm guessing. Okay.
He said it was shaped like two dishes put together. So I'm guessing same disc shape. Okay. With a Y-shaped antenna on top. Like, so like a kid would draw a UFO. That's how I'm imagining it.
Right? Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it had four legs about 3 foot long. So exactly like how a kid would draw it.
Right.
Okay. The object shone like aluminum, so metallic. It descended diagonally to the ground.
Okay. Got it. Okay.
Yeah. Not just like coming
down. Right.
Now it said three well-proportioned beings of human appearance, about 2.5 feet tall, got out of it through a door and started to walk around.
Well-proportioned.
So not, yeah, so everything looked in order.
Like, oh,
there's not a big head or anything like that. Like everything looked
normal. Gotcha. Okay.
Is what he's saying. He said one held an unlighted flashlight. Another scratched at the ground with his hand. And the third one was holding some sort of instrument in his hand.
Scary.
So he heard, I guess they heard his truck approaching.
Sure.
And these three things hurried up and returned to their craft. And the third, I guess, seemed to have difficulty getting back in.
Too well proportioned.
So he's the one they were going to leave behind.
He's a fat guy trying to get in. Yeah. I know the pain. Trust me.
He said that the UFO began to rock back and forth like a falling leaf. So I'm guessing that wobbly.
Right.
Like how they described before.
That's weird.
Yeah. And then it took off suddenly at a very high speed. He said it lasted about 2 or 3 minutes and they didn't find any traces of anything.
That's weird.
Mm-hmm.
Poor guy.
But it's just like they're out collecting, like doing things, and then they get noticed and they hurry up and get back on.
It reminds me of E.T. You know, the poor E.T.'s out there just trying to get some ferns, mm-hmm. and then they take off because
that's exactly what it sounds like.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
All right. Number 24 on November 26th in Bismarck, North Dakota. Pilots saw two luminous objects join up, hover about 10 seconds, then go out of sight in seconds. What's interesting is this was confirmed by Air Force radar. Mm-hmm. The plot thickens.
Yeah.
Now, number 25. This was in November 26 in Lake Cypress, Florida. I don't know if I've ever been there. Four bright oval objects paced an aircraft. Pilots turned the plane towards them. You know, a lot of pilots will do that to get a better look at things.
Right, yeah.
And then the objects formed a vertical stack, which, holy crap, that happened. You saw that shot straight up in the air and they were out of sight as well. Again, radar confirmed UFO.
And that's interesting for 68.
That's very interesting for 68. Now
to admit.
Yeah. And then they stacked up, which by the way, is hard to do in an aircraft without hitting each other. Mm-hmm. And then poof, right up in the sky.
Hmm. And that's four.
Yeah.
Four at a time.
Yeah. That's scary.
That had to be really scary for them.
Well, yeah, and you got to feel bad for sure. And you feel these pilots are like, okay, we got to see this. And like I said, a lot of pilots will kind of, if they are allowed to, will deviate course just a little bit so they can get a better line of sight. And when they saw this thing probably stack up, they probably had to change their britches when they got home.
Well, I would imagine so.
Yeah. Now, number 26, November 28th in Nangkon Pham, Thailand. I really hope I'm pronouncing that right. So at 9:56 a.m., the Royal Thai Air Force Base ground control approach reported two low and slow moving objects approximately 13 nautical miles south of their position. Contact was lost and the objects were nine nautical miles west of the base. Sightings were confirmed by radar. And the funniest thing I find about this is the command post was informed that the sightings were definitely not ghosts.
That was
in quotes, by the way. They're definitely not ghosts. I don't know why I get such a kick out of that.
Well, that's funny. Okay, number 27, which is my favorite. It's my favorite.
Yep.
happened on November 28th in Lima, Peru. So there were students in this school, and I'm going to try Recoleta de Montevideo.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah.
Possibly.
Yeah.
And they reported seeing a strange, short humanoid with an egg-shaped head and a blinking light on the chest area and what appeared to be a long antenna-like protrusion on its back. It appeared to have duck-like feet, and it was shorter than a seven-year-old boy. Hmm. A priest and a teacher also reported seeing the creature. The first thing I thought was E.T. E.T. Oh, no. The blinking light and the duck-like feet. I was like, aw.
That's absolutely what I thought of, too.
And it really makes me think that Steven Spielberg knows about this, and that's how he created E.T. I'd be so curious to know if that's how he came up with
it. Well, sure. And even like with Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Exactly. It's a Spielberg movie.
Well, you know he had to do research. Oh, yeah. Come up with all these. But did he hear about this one?
It sounds so like it, doesn't it? Little squashy feet. It
sounds exactly like, except for the antenna on his back. But,
yeah, but if you think about his head and the way it moved, it would telescope kind of like an antenna. That's
true. Yeah, it would. But the duck-like feet and shorter and the little light. I was just like, oh, I love DT.
That's so wild.
It came out. It came out very 83, close to.
83, I think.
Yeah.
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 Well, number
that's why I wore my ET shirt.
That's right.
I love ET. He's my favorite.
And folks, for the last one, number 28. Thanks for hanging around with us, by the way. So November 30th in Deltox Marsh, Wisconsin. Well, I can't talk at all today.
Wisconsin.
Let's try that again. November 30th, Deltox Marsh, Wisconsin. This is at night. 12 hunters saw a short, dark, brown-haired, hairless-faced creature that left three-toed web tracks in the snow. That's also interesting. That's very E.T.-ish there as it passed in front of them. Now, thankfully, they were too afraid to shoot it because it looked too human-like.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So you got some hunters out there that want to take, you know, a shot at some game, and they decided, yeah, I'm not firing at this thing because it looks like another freaking human.
Dark brown. Mm-hmm. Hairless.
It's just wild.
It's E.T.
It is E.T.
It is.
Steven Spielberg, if you're out there, please let us know.
Yes. That's where you got the inspiration.
Yeah.
I'm dying to know.
If Steven Spielberg comments on anything that we do, we're done, guys. We've made it.
We've made it.
We have made it. So we had talked at the beginning of this that there was a reason why we kind of brought this up. The fact that all this happened in 1 month in 1968. It's crazy. Yeah, it's all crazy.
Yeah.
And like we said, we left a lot on the cutting room floor, guys. Mm-hmm. There's tons of this stuff all in that same month. But there's something very important to remember here. This is 1968. There was something very monumental that the human race was about to embark on. Okay.
Yes.
In late December of that same year, Apollo 8 crew of Frank Borman, Jim Lovell, and Bill Anders became the first humans to leave Earth and journey to another world. Now, they spent 20 hours orbiting the moon, and then they made the flight back home. I don't find that inconsequential.
Yeah. Like, they were checking out what we were up to.
Yeah, they're like, okay, before these meat bags start flying into space. Right.
To check them out.
Yeah, let's do some due diligence here and find out if they're not completely off their rocker.
Because they had to watch that we were preparing to go.
Yeah, I mean, again, they're smarter than we are. Yeah. You got to think that. At least I want to think that. Mm-hmm. And they were checking us out. And of course, not more than, 6 months later, July 20th, 1969, if you don't know that, kids, you better remember this, humans walked on the moon for the first time. Mm-hmm. So I got to think there was some...
There's something to do with that. I really do think that they were here finding out what we were doing.
Yeah.
Because they were taking soil samples. They caught, you know?
Yeah.
And there were many different types. It wasn't just one. You know, we think that they saw the Nordics.
Yeah.
The Grays, for sure, those two. And then whatever E.T. would be.
Yeah, little squashy guy.
I mean,
and the poor fat guy who can get back in the.
He didn't say that. Yeah. He was just slow.
Oh, okay. He was portly and you know it.
No, they were all proportioned.
Yeah, well, I'm well proportioned too. But anyway, well, guys, thanks so much for hanging out with us. We had a great time.
Let us know what you think.
Yeah.
Why do you think that they were here in November, right before we decided to go to the moon?
Absolutely. And do your research too. There's more out there, guys. Yeah, all in the same month.
There's several more stories, and some are really bizarre.
Very bizarre. Mm-hmm. On that note, guys, we will see you next time.
See you next week.